Hello, this is Wendy Bauer with the Decatur Herald and Review, dated January 13th, 2020. We will begin today's reading on the front page with the article headlined, Back to Tradition. Chamber of Commerce has used the same ceremonial scissors for 87 years. This is part of the Together Decatur series. Although the organization's staff has changed throughout the decades, one thing has remained constant in 87 years of ribbon-cutting ceremonies for new businesses and developments. The Decatur Regional Chamber of Commerce couldn't be more excited to be here and celebrate this ribbon-cutting ceremony, said Chamber President Miranda Rothrock during one such event. We are so proud to use the scissors for the ribbon-cutting that have been used since the 1930s. And we are so pleased to use them again. The chamber president and mayor, if available, will then cut small snips in the satin ribbons before the business owner or manager uses the scissors to make the final full cut. The same ornate scissors are used each time. For nearly 130 years, welcoming a new enterprise has been important to the chamber in building relationships. The ribbon-cutting ceremonies not only highlight the business, but also introduce it to the community. A business, new or old, with new products and services, we want to be there and help them celebrate, Rothrock said. Unlike other cities who use large, attention-grabbing scissors, the chamber continues to use the delicate shears because of the rich history they have. Throughout the years, the scissors have also been transported via an equally elaborate box. They may use the big scissors or tie a ribbon around them, Rothrock said about other ribbon-cutting ceremony organizers, but we use our scissors because it brings back to tradition. The German-made scissors were purchased from Reich Brothers, a Decatur jewelry store. The scissors were first known to be used on October 18, 1933, to open the North Main Street subway under the Wabash Railroad tracks. The chamber began keeping a full record after the scissors were used on October 3, 1955, when Illinois Governor William G. Stratton cut the ribbon opening US 36 and the A.E. Staley Bridge over Decatur. Because of their celebrity status, the scissors are kept tucked safely away in the chamber office. They have not only been in the hands of presidents, but also two U.S. senators, Illinois governors, local lawmakers, mayors, and business leaders have snipped a few ribbons throughout the years. Traditions are important to the chamber and for several members of the community. According to Rothrock, even the care of the scissors dates back several decades. We've been told they have never been sharpened either, for good luck, she said. And this was part of the Together Decatur series. If you know a person or a story that exemplifies the best of Decatur, contact Donette Beckett at 217-421-6983. And next, Illinois government. Taxing issues ahead. Property tax relief panels, sales tax plan sets off squabbles. Governor J.B. Pritzker focused on winning over voters on a new graduated rate income tax, is dismissing a proposal floated by a property tax relief task force that would expand the Illinois sales tax base to help fund public schools. That's not something that I am supportive of. I think there are other ways for us to go about it, Pritzker said of the idea, which was included in a draft report from the 88-member panel. But I think it's worthy of people bringing up all of the ideas because, look, there are a lot of things we ought to consider, and it's not just one thing that's going to solve the property tax challenge that we've got in this state. The final report from the legislative panel was due December 31st, and both the missed deadline and the contents of the 36-page draft, shared with multiple news outlets last week, set off partisan squabbling. The difficulty in reaching a consensus on recommendations, even among Democrats, indicates that the historically thorny issue of substantial property tax relief could once again vex lawmakers this spring. Expanding the reach of the sales tax while reducing the tax rate was a proposal backed by two task force subcommittees, signaling significant support from some of Pritzker's fellow Democrats. Additional revenues could be used to boost state funding for schools and to stock a new property tax relief fund, said Representative Sam Yingling, the Grays Lake Democrat who is chairing the massive task force. I don't think we can have a realistic conversation about property tax relief without addressing the need to diversify the education funding revenue stream, Yingling said. It's just not possible. An attempt to expand the sales tax would come as Pritzker asks voters in November to change the state's constitution to impose a graduated rate income tax to replace the state's current flat tax to generate an estimated $3.6 billion. Republicans have repeatedly attacked Democrats over pushing tax increases rather than cuts. And a sales tax expansion push coupled with the income tax overhaul could play into that Republican narrative during a legislative election year. Broad property tax relief has proved a difficult issue to address in Illinois, spanning decades of leadership in the state. But some Democratic lawmakers have been hesitant to fully back Pritzker's graduated income tax plan without a direct tie to property tax relief. Last spring, lawmakers considered a proposal that would have frozen property tax rates if voters approved the graduated income tax and if the state took on a larger share of funding education. But that proposal didn't advance out of the House, and the massive task force was created instead. Pritzker has promised to deliver tax relief to property owners and points to several pieces of legislation he's signed since taking office as steps toward that goal. Those include a consolidation of downstate and suburban police and firefighter pension funds, increased school funding from the state, and his $45 billion Rebuild Illinois construction program. Those all work to alleviate local property tax need, Pritzker said. The idea of expanding the sales tax to include some services, such as haircuts, dry cleaning, and accounting and legal work, has long been discussed and discarded. Senator Don DeWitt, a St. Charles Republican and a member of the task force, said new state revenue from legal adult-use cannabis and a recommitment of 100% of Illinois lottery revenues to schools are other potential streams to increase the state's share of education funding. If the task force's final recommendations include the sales tax expansion, that would touch off a very long conversation and discussion, DeWitt said. That one is going to require very careful analysis and construction, DeWitt said. The first thing people will think is that it's an increase in taxes, unless we find a way to show it's a shift and not an increase. That was the reaction of some top House Republicans who denounced the draft report and said Democrats rejected their ideas that included limiting the so-called unfunded mandates on schools and local governments. For a state that is so in need of property tax reform, the Democrats have instead proposed tax increases, House Republican leader Jim Durkin said at a news conference this week. Heaven help the middle class. The Civic Federation, a nonpartisan budget watchdog, has advocated for an expansion of the sales tax to some services as part of a broad fiscal overhaul that also would include limiting state spending and taxing retirement income. Lawmakers' priority should be a comprehensive plan for what we're doing to fund our government, Civic Federation President Lawrence Massal said. merely expanding the sales tax base and then saying that the new services will go to relieve property taxes is not likely to have an impact unless there is a comprehensive plan for whether that amount of revenue will be sufficient for putting a freeze on school district property taxes, or whether there's going to be some greater revenue sharing by the state, Massal said. Lawmakers have tried to overhaul the state's property tax system through nearly a dozen task forces, special commissions, and blue ribbon panels since the 1970s. In the mid-1990s, Republican Governor Jim Edgar championed a plan to raise state income taxes by more than $1 billion, with a corresponding reduction in local property taxes and an infusion of new funding for schools. But the plan ran into staunch opposition from Edgar's fellow Republicans in the Senate. The latest draft report raises the prospects of such tax swaps, with one subcommittee calling for the removal of school districts from the property tax system so that the state of Illinois has sole funding responsibility for K through 12 schools. But a key Democratic lawmaker who was a member of the task force said the idea is astronomically untenable. Representative Mike Zalewski, a Riverside Democrat who chairs the House Revenue Committee, said the shift would require billions of dollars in new funding beyond the nearly $9 billion in general revenue the state is spending this year. Local school districts together spent nearly $20 billion during the 2017-18 school year, according to the most recent figures from the Illinois State Board of Education. Within the confines of the current budget and the current way we fund things, it doesn't seem like it's in the immediate future, Zalewski said. The last major change the General Assembly approved was a 1991 law that capped increases in property tax collections in the collar counties at 5%, or the rate of inflation, whichever is less. The law was extended to Cook County 3 years later, and other counties were later allowed to adopt the caps by ballot referendum. The draft report contemplates a number of changes to the tax caps, including eliminating them altogether and leaving it up to local governments to decide how much revenue is needed to fund operations. Yingling said he remains optimistic the General Assembly will act on a number of the recommendations the task force is putting forth. I think we're at a very unique nexus at this point in time, where the legislature understands and has the willpower to do something about the property tax crisis, Yingling said. There is a definitive recognition that something has to be done, and it has to be done now. And moving to the state and local page, Eyes on Eagles. Winter festivals in Illinois celebrate our nation's symbol. Although it is increasingly common to see a bald eagle in central Illinois throughout the year, winter is the best time to see them in great numbers in the state, and several festivals are scheduled to help people not only observe the magnificent birds, but learn about them, too. The annual Bald Eagle Watch, organized by the Illinois Audubon Society at Starved Rock State Park, will take place January 25th and 26th. Activities are scheduled at Starved Rock Lodge, the State Park Visitor Center, and across the Illinois River at the Illinois Waterway Visitor Center, adjacent to the lock and dam. The Illinois Raptor Center, based in Decatur, also takes part in the event, presenting a live bald eagle at a free program in the Starved Rock Lodge. The Illinois Birds of Prey program is at 10 a.m., 1 p.m., and 3 p.m. On an average of 3,500 people attend the Bald Eagle Watch, according to Joe Fessett, assistant to the executive director of the Illinois Audubon Society. People love eagles, said Fessett. There's such an aura of, wow, an eagle, even though their comeback has been so strong. For a while, they were so threatened. In 1963, barely 400 nesting pairs of eagles could be found in the contiguous United States. But efforts such as habitat protection and the banning of DDT helped them rebound. The first time the Society sponsored Bald Eagle Watch at Starved Rock was 1999, only 5 years after the status of bald eagles was changed from endangered to threatened. The number of active eagle nests in Illinois has grown from about 100 in 2007, when the birds were taken off the threatened list, to an estimated 300 to 350 last year, according to ornithologists with the Prairie Research Institute at the University of Illinois. The presence of the Starved Rock Dam and others around Illinois is a key reason why eagles flock to Illinois in winter. The turbulent waters around the dams remain unfrozen even in the coldest of winters, and fish stunned while flowing through the open gates of the dams are a relatively easy catch for the eagles. Plus, trees on nearby islands give eagles a great vantage point. The colder the winter and more frozen the lakes and rivers are, the greater the number of eagles that will be concentrated at the dams, not only along the Illinois River, but also on the Rock, Fox, and Mississippi Rivers. If you're not suffering, you're not seeing a lot of eagles, Fessett said with a laugh. Starved Rock is about 110 miles north of Decatur. Good places to watch for eagles include the top of Starved Rock, the wall along the Illinois River at the park, and the Illinois Waterway Visitor Center by the lock. You can see birds from those locations on just about any winter day, but spotting scopes will be set up during Bald Eagle Watch to give you a much better view, and volunteers will be there to help answer questions. Rather than moving your car from site to site, pay $2 for an all-day ticket on the trolley that will run among the Lodge, Park Visitor Center, and Illinois Waterway Visitor Center. Just be sure to allow adequate time for travel between the locations, as the trolleys can get crowded and you might need to wait for a second one. Another celebration is Fulton Mason Eagle Day on February 1st in Havana and Lewistown. Havana, on the Illinois River, is about 75 miles northwest of Decatur. Activities will be at the Havana Park District Nature Center, 416 North Schrader Street in Havana, and the district's Chester Center, 200 South McKinley Street in Havana. Nearby Dixon Mounds Museum, 10956 North Dixon Mounds Road in Lewistown, will have a live bird program, exhibits, arts and crafts, and science activities. Pere Marquette State Park in Grafton has eagle watching programs from 8:30 a.m. to 2 p.m., several days through March 6th. Make required reservations by calling the park's visitor center at 618-786-3323. We stop and get out to look with a spotting scope, where there's a good view and a safe place to stop, said Randy Holbrook of Pere Marquette State Park. In a good year, we'll see better than 100 eagles in a day, said Holbrook. The last week of January and the first week of February are usually the best. Next, chimney fire causes damage. Firefighters contain homes damage to an estimated $15,000. From Decatur, fire crews arrived in time to stop a chimney fire from spreading into the rest of a Decatur home Sunday afternoon. Battalion Chief Jim Ohl said passersby noticed the belching smoke from the fire at 3520 East Corman Street and called it in at 1:35 p.m. He said fire crews set off without having a precise address, but then the homeowner also called while they were en route. They reported to the dispatcher that everybody, four adults, were out of the house too, and that's always a bonus for us when we know that going in, added Ohl. Damage was estimated at $10,000 to the home's structure and another $5,000 to contents. Ole said the chimney above a wood-burning fire was a metal flue encased in wood, and his crews arrived to find flames showing on the outside where the fire had already burned through the surrounding chimney structure. It had burned all that off, and it had started to get up into the roof and ceiling areas of the home, said Ole. Our guys did a great job of getting after it right away and knocking the fire down. He said the fire was knocked down within 5 minutes, but firefighters stayed on the scene for an hour checking for hot spots and investigating the cause. The homeowner said he had cleaned the chimney this season, said Ole, but the house is close to the woods and there could have been a pigeon nest up in there or something. Next, Pier 1 Imports in Forsyth is closing. Company said last week it would shut nearly half its stores. The Pier 1 Imports store in Forsyth is closing, one of up to 450 locations the company has said it will shut down. The home decor company announced last week that it would close nearly half its 942 stores as it struggles to draw consumers and compete online. Signs in the window at the Forsyth store this weekend announced the closure and said everything was on sale for 20 to 40% off. A person who answered the phone at the Forsyth store on Saturday referred questions to a manager who was not immediately available. The store at 987 South US 51 opened in 1999. The company has not released a list of where all the store closures will occur. It operates stores in Canada and the U.S., including locations in Springfield, Bloomington, and Champaign. Pier 1 also plans layoffs at its corporate headquarters in Fort Worth, Texas. It will also close distribution centers. The company has not said how many workers will be impacted, although decisions that impact our associates are never easy. Reducing the number of our brick-and-mortar locations is a necessary business decision, CEO Robert Riesbeck said in a statement Monday. Riesbeck, who has a background in corporate turnarounds, was named CEO in November. On Monday, the company added to its board two members with expertise in corporate restructuring. The company, which was founded in California in 1962, has been trying to revamp its stores and change its offerings to appeal more to younger customers, but it is struggling to compete with budget-friendly home decor sites like Wayfair. And next, Black Hawk statue restoration finished. Sculpture, known as Eternal Indian, has stood for 109 years. From Oregon, Illinois. The Illinois landmark, known as the Eternal Indian Statue, is finally complete after years of planning and funding. The scaffolding surrounding the sculpture, also known as Black Hawk, is being removed and should be completely taken down within 2 weeks, the Rockford Register-Star reported. The City of Oregon is ready to celebrate the 109-year-old statue's makeover, Mayor Ken Williams said. We've received messages and comments from all over the country, Williams said. People who have visited the statue, people who used to live in the area, and they've followed the progress of what's happened and the problems with the statue as it deteriorated. Now that it's repaired and restored, it is very important to the community. In 2015, an effort was launched to restore the statue, Illinois Conservation Foundation Executive Director Crystal Kerfman said. Restoration efforts paused in 2016 after the conservator and the project engineer disagreed over how much of the statue's exterior concrete skin needed to be removed. The statue sat under a black tarp for about 2 years. In 2018, the nonprofit Black Hawk Restoration Team was formed to jumpstart the project. The organization raised about $270,000 in donations from the private sector, and the Illinois Department of Natural Resources was awarded a $350,000 grant for the restoration. I think that just shows how valuable this monument is to the people from this area who grew up here and possibly still live here or moved away because they really supported it, said organization chairperson Jan Stilson. It really was a grassroots effort. Workers began erecting the scaffolding in September after repair work was to begin in spring of 2018. An unveiling ceremony is being planned for the spring. It's been an icon for the Sauk Valley and the city of Oregon for years and years, Williams said. We are largely an ecotourism community, and that's a prime draw for us. We expect to see a lot of tourism pick up just because the statue is finished. People are excited to see what it looks like now. And a photograph accompanies the article, an undated photo from the City of Oregon, Illinois website, which shows the 50-foot Eternal Indian statue. It's set against a beautiful blue sky, but is showing signs of wear in this photo. Next, suspect arrested in East Olive shooting. From Decatur, police said a 20-year-old Decatur man arrested after a high-speed chase Friday night has been booked on a preliminary charge of attempted murder. Detective Sergeant Chris Copeland with Decatur Police said Jacquez L. Jones was being sought on a warrant after shooting Thursday afternoon in the 200 block of East Olive Street, which left a victim, 20, with life-threatening wounds. Preliminary charges are subject to review by the state's attorney's office. The Friday night pursuit leading to Jones's arrest began when officers attempted to pull a vehicle over for a traffic stop, and it sped off. The chase ended in the area of West Forest and South McClellan Avenues. The Macon County Jail charge sheet for Jones lists the attempted murder charge and also lists preliminary charges of aggravated fleeing and eluding, resisting obstructing police, and driving on a suspended license. Jones is being held on bail set at $5.75 million, meaning he must post $507,500 to bond out. Police are also continuing with investigations into a second shooting Thursday, this time involving an 18-year-old Decatur man who was wounded just after 7 p.m. in the 2300 block of East Prairie Street. His injuries were also described as life-threatening in a statement from Detective Sergeant Steve Carroll. Copeland would not comment on whether the two shooting incidents might be related. Anyone with information should contact the Criminal Investigations Division at 217-424-2734 or Crime Stoppers at 217-423-8477. And next, police say a couple robbed at gunpoint in their home. From Decatur, a Decatur man and woman told police they were held up and robbed at gunpoint by two masked men who invaded their home early Sunday. Detective Sergeant Chris Copeland with Decatur Police said the couple, both 24, were robbed of their cell phones after they told the robbers they had no money. And they also took the man's pants, said Copeland. The detective said the male victim told police he had gone outside to retrieve something from his car around 1:42 a.m. in the 900 block of North Martin Luther King Jr. Drive and came back to find the two men waiting for him in the common stairwell of his apartment building. They then walked him into his apartment, where the man's girlfriend was present with their one-year-old daughter. Both suspects were described as being armed with semi-automatic handguns. Copeland said the robbers left without causing any injuries. And we'll take a short break now and return with the second half hour of the Decatur Herald and Review, January 13th, 2020. Please stay tuned.